Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and our friends at the Madison Teamsters. Joining us now, Madison School Board member Anna Moffitt. She is running for re-election, and that is April 3rd, a week from now, as we record this podcast today. Anna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about your background and what you set out to accomplish in your first term in the school board.
Sure. So my background is I grew up here in Madison, graduated from West High School in 1990. We were just talking about that. After high school, I attended UW-Madison and graduated from there with an elementary education degree as well as a political science minor. And went on to teach, taught a couple of years in Texas in the Rio Grande Valley, then moved back up here to Wisconsin. I was not hired by MMSD, although I did apply, but I did end up teaching out in DeForest for about 5 years, teaching second grade. Really loved doing that. After my husband and I started our family, we had 3 kids that were under 2, so I did have to leave the profession and to take care of our kids at home. And early on, my youngest son was diagnosed with autism, and he's significantly impacted. So that kept me out of the classroom going back to work just to make sure that all the things were in place so he could be successful. And through that work of advocating for him, and then also during that time, that was really when stuff was going on with Governor Walker and Act 10 that I just felt like I needed to be more active around advocating for our public schools, advocating for individuals with disabilities, and that became my job. And then I work currently as a parent peer specialist, working with and helping families that have children and youth with mental health needs. And so all of those experiences really led me to this belief that I need to do more, and I wanted to run on the Board of Education because I was seeing things either out there around public schools and the attacks on our teachers, and I was seeing how our kids weren't getting their needs met, that I felt like I needed to be on the Board of Education to change those things and make sure that the voice of our educators was being heard, as well as the voices of our families that have children and youth with disabilities.
All right. This race between yourself and Gloria Rejas is kind of come down to the way the media has covered it, is that she wants increased security in the schools, and I don't mean security as isolated to what happened in Florida, but problems with students misbehaving in the hallways versus you wanting to put more focus on special needs students. That's sort of the way the media has broken this down. But and yet, as I read through all this, I see areas of, you know, different emphasis, but I don't see a lot of major differences in your views on the issues. Is that correct? Do I have that wrong?
I think the major difference that I see between myself and my opponent is just that I bring with me over 20 years of experience in the field of education and decades of work around advocating for our public educators as well as our public schools. So I feel like that's the big thing. You know, I believe as a former elementary education teacher that a lot of the challenges that our schools face have been created by folks making decisions about education that don't have any background in that area.
Give me an example. Give me an example.
Sure. So prior to coming on, well, I'll give you one example at the state level. So what our state government has said is instead of investing more resources in our public schools and compensating our public educators well, their thought was to make cuts in that area to allow and to compensate for those cuts for the budget, they said, okay, well, you can just raise your class sizes and make them bigger. We'll get rid of SAGE classrooms. And then what we'll also do is make it so teachers can become teachers more easily so they don't have to have appropriate certification or licensing. And so that's where you're seeing folks that would know, number one, small class sizes are critical for making sure that you can meet a wide range of student needs, as well as for developing relationships with students, which are critical. And then also, we need to have well-qualified staff in those positions, not people who can get their license online for $1,500.
So you're complaining more about the decisions made at the state level and not so much at the local level?
I see it at different levels. I see it at the federal. Locally, I had a tremendous concern. Prior to being on the Board of Education, I was regularly attending board meetings, meeting with board members around different areas that I have expertise in, which is obviously special ed to some degree, as well as behavioral and mental health. And one thing that I saw at the local level is that when we were having the discussion around the behavior education plan, I had significant concerns as an elementary educator, because what I saw within that plan was a critical need to shift away from punishment to more proactive strategies. But what happened is I think the plan was implemented too soon without all the foundational work that had to be done that wasn't done.
And yeah, I've had a lot of teachers now, pulling their hair out over the last few years over mm-hmm. discipline issues. This morning, there's a piece where Jen Cheatham, the school superintendent, said fear of being seen as racist may work against good behavior in schools, and a tendency by staff to let small stuff slide, perhaps due to fears of appearing racist. What was your reaction to that? Have you read that?
I did just read that this morning. My reaction to that article is, I am deeply concerned that we're covering topics about issues that directly impact our educators, many times our students of color, our students with disabilities. And within that article, we didn't hear any of those voices talking about what they felt was going on. And I think I continue to have concerns about that, because if you're not talking to the people that are most impacted and letting them share their perspective, I'm not sure if we're getting an accurate picture of what the real issues are or what we're trying to solve.
What do you think the real issues are?
I believe the real issues are at a school level. Like I said before, I believe there's a lack of staffing at the school level. We've been under cuts for many years, and so we've been cutting staff. Now, we're going into a period where we do have some additional funds, so we haven't been cutting staff, but, you know, we've slowly been cutting school-based staff year after year. I think that has a negative impact. I also think that the staff that we have don't have necessarily the professional development and tools that they need to appropriately serve some of the students that are in our schools and in their classrooms. And so I think we can go about changing that a couple of different ways. We can actually bring in folks who do have the knowledge and experience to support our, you know, educators in the classrooms, or we can provide that professional development and the time and the space to get those tools. So I continue to believe that inadequate staffing is a challenge.
Let me play a clip. Yeah, let me just play a clip of your opponent and what she said on For the Record the other day.
I have I have spent a lot of time talking to teachers, students, even before I started running my campaign. And a lot of the challenges are what's happening in the hallways. What's, bullying that's occurring. I was just talking to some Memorial High School students a few days ago. Bullying, sexual assaults. This is real, right? That's happening in our classrooms. If we don't really get a handle of ensuring that we have health and safe schools, then, you know, a lot of what we do is really not going to help. We really need to focus our efforts on healthy and safe schools.
All right. Your reaction to that?
I think kids being in the hallway is a challenge. But I think you have to look more closely at why students might be in the hallway. And it can be a very complicated and complex issue. And I think when we're looking at that, in order to get kids back into the classroom, I believe that, number one, they need to see value. They need to see themselves being valued in that classroom and have a place. They need to see that they're successful in that classroom. And I also believe that if they're not feeling like that and they're not being successful, then they won't go there. And so for me, I think safe and healthy schools is critical. That's been so much of my work as a board member. But in order to do that, what we have to make sure is that kids are feeling valued and connected within their schools. And to do that, I think, again, it really goes back to how do we make sure that we're setting up the environment where kids can develop strong relationships with their teachers and school staff, and how can we make sure that kids have the supports in place so that they can be academically successful when they are in our school buildings.
What about the... You may not think that the kids are getting enough reinforcement, or there aren't enough teachers to be adequately dealing with children with special needs. As far as the actual bad behavior in the hallways, you still have to deal with that issue, and how do you deal with it?
Yeah, at this point, what the district has done is to continue. I mean, every year we look at the behavior education plan and we look at the data and then we adjust. And so I think, unfortunately, what we have done is we've kind of tried to use more what I would consider like exclusionary practices. So now, you know, last year we added, if you're in the hallways after so many times, you can get suspended. And we can do that. I guess the challenge that I have, though, with that is if you're a kid that's already in the hallway, suspending them is actually, you know, even better than being in the hallway, because now they can be at home. And it's not really addressing why they're in the hallway to begin with. So my belief is, and I'll continue to do this as my work on the board, is to really look at, do we have the systems and supports in place so that we can be teaching the behavior that we want to be seeing in our schools. And I think that's an area, if you look at all the data, we talk a lot about reducing suspensions, reducing expulsions. But what we haven't done a good job is looking at, okay, if a kid needs an intervention, whether it's maybe access to mental health care, or maybe it's access to a highly qualified reading teacher, do we have that available to them? And two, are they receiving that? Is anything being done?
We'll talk more with Madison School Board member Anna Moffitt next at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SliceOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SliceOffice.com.
We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like the Axley Law Firm, S&R Remodeling, and Madison Computer Works. Joining us again, Ann Moffitt. And I want to ask you about police officers in the schools. That was a hot topic, and there are a lot of people that don't believe police officers should be in the school. It appears as though you and your opponent agree that they should be there, but to varying degrees, you don't think they should be doing as much social work. Can you kind of explain that?
Yeah. My comments around that is because I'm part of the ERO ad hoc, I've met with all the EROs, and during the discussions that I've had with them is that the majority of their time is spent doing social work. So I'm not opposed to them doing social work. Mm-hmm. My question has been, if that's what they're doing, would it be more appropriate to hire an additional social worker? So that's
although if you talk to
my point.
If you talk to Chief Koval, he basically said that's the majority of his officers work out on the streets as well as inside the schools, mm-hmm. social work. You know, they have far more interaction with trying to help people than you know, slapping handcuffs on them and, you know, or shooting at them. That, in fact, you know, police officers are kind of trained to be social workers. What as far as you're concerned, what is the officer's main job in those schools?
What are the officer's main job?
Yeah, what would you like them to prioritize on?
You know, I think that I think the officers serve a number of roles in our schools. I think they're beneficial in making sure that there's strong communication between what's possibly happening within the community that may then be coming into the schools because of, you know, obviously our students are in our community and they're also in our schools. So that's been helpful. I also think it's beneficial that they are out there developing relationships with students that may not have a trusted adult in the building other than them. And I have seen that with some of the students, and some of the students have really talked about that, how they really connect with their ERO and their schools, because for some of our kids, there's even shared experience between the ERO and the students themselves that they've talked about. I do think it's beneficial if you have a really serious incident that you have an officer in the school who may know the students involved with that situation. I know last year I advocated strongly to make sure that our EROs have access. For some of our students that have IEPs, individual education plans, they also have something called a behavior intervention plan because they may have unsafe behavior, and I think it's critical that our EROs have access to that information because if an outside officer came in who may not know that student, they could actually do something that could worsen the situation. So I think that's been helpful, and we need to continue to make sure that that's happening. What I would say that I don't agree with that the officers are being used for, that folks have talked about, is that when you're, for example, an officer gave that school staff had called them because a kid wouldn't give up their cell phone. I don't agree with that practice because mm-hmm. that's not why that officer is in that school to be handling stuff. Or let's say all the kids won't get out of the hallway, so then they call the officer to clear the hallways. And so that's something that's come up that hadn't been discussed before that we're really addressing. And that's really been through the work of the ERO ad hoc committee as well as the work through the MMSD MPD working committee. Just kind of looking at what are the things that we think are helpful and how can we build upon that, and what are the things that are not beneficial and possibly even harmful. How do we reduce that or get rid of that?
How do you keep all these committees straight?
I know. There are so many committees. I apologize, too, and I always start talking in, like, acronyms, but it's really hard because every committee also not only has 9 to 12 members, it has, like, 6 to 7 names that title the committee, so it's a lot.
As far as mental health goes and people that have mental health disabilities, you know, I have mental illness in my family, and I know that sometimes mental illness can be triggered and can really come to fruition during puberty. So this is obviously during a student, you know, going through K through 12. Is it being addressed in a way that the school actually can get people help, because there's such a shortage of mental health professionals in this community, and there's a lot of psychiatrists that won't even take people that are on any type of public assistance.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. Accessing mental health services in our community is a tremendous barrier for our families, in particular for our families that are lower income, because like you said, so many providers won't accept Medicaid because of the reimbursement rate. That coming on to the Board of Education, that was an area that I really wanted to focus on. And so I was successful in advocating for increasing district resources towards a program called Building Bridges, which Building Bridges is just for K through 5, but Building Bridges provides our students with access to outside mental health services, as well as bringing in mental health providers into our schools to help our teachers better understand how they can be working with the kids. In the past couple of years, too, we've started our focus now more towards middle school, which I think is a critical area, as well as high school. So we have put in some programs as well as some assessments to see whether a student may be developing a mental health need. And so we have expanded that. I've been very supportive of bringing in mental health providers into the schools to do school-based services. A lot of the families that I work with don't have reliable access to transportation, and so for them to drive across town to go see a therapist is really nearly impossible. So if we can bring those therapists into our schools where the kids already are and transportation isn't an issue, I have fully supported that, and we have expanded that, I think, to 8 schools now in middle school, although I can't be quoted on that because I'm not sure. But I believe at the high school level, we need to be doing more. And I've said this before, at West High School has 2,000 students, and we have 2 social workers. That's insufficient. That's 1 social worker per 1,000 kids. I don't even know how anybody could disagree with that. So we need to be doing more. And what we're going to have to do is really be working with our community partners, whether it's Journey, Sankofa, Rise, as well as the county and the city, to make sure that kids can access mental health services and make mental health wellness a priority.
You know, like it or not, Madison has to compete against the schools that surround the city, whether it be Sun Prairie, McFarland, Middleton, Verona, Mount Horeb, because parents can either pick up and move or they can apply to have their kids put in these other schools. What about I talked to some friends that are moving back to the Madison area, and they're pretty liberal people, but they're like, I'm not sending my kid to Madison schools. I read about what's going on at Toki Middle School. I don't want them there. I don't want them there. I don't want them there. Are you concerned that there's going to be a drain of students that are in a pretty solid platform leaving the school district?
I think that as a board member, I've always looked at what our numbers look like for open enrollment. Open enrollment out and open enrollment in is a tremendous concern, and we need to make sure that we have declining open enrollment numbers, because when folks leave our school district, they take the resources with them to other school districts. The positive thing is that our numbers our open enrollees out have been declining, so that's great. We're also doing better research around families that are leaving the district and when they're choosing to. And one thing that's really interesting about it is that families are opening and rolling out at kindergarten. So it's really prior to them ever getting into our elementary, into our school system, that they're open and rolling out. So to me, that shows that we need to do a better job of talking with our families that have younger students to dispel some of the misinformation that's out there about Madison Public Schools. I've done that as a board member by working more closely with the Realtors Association, because those are the folks that are selling the houses where our kids will be going, if they are living, that go to our schools. So I think we need to continue to do that. As a school board member, too, and as a parent of having 3 kids in our public schools, I'm continually asking families, do your kids go to our schools? What do you like about them? What don't you like about them? What should we change? And being responsive to what parents have concerns about or what they'd like to see. I think, though, one thing that we have to continue to do and talk about is that Madison Public Schools are exceptional schools. When you look at the number of kids, let's say, who are National Merit Scholars, the majority are coming out of MMSD. We have amazing programs across the board, whether it's dual language immersion across the city. We have community schools in different areas where the schools are actually like the hub of the neighborhood and families can access stuff like employment classes, healthcare, dentistry, I'm hoping down the road, housing advice. We have, with our high schools, we have extremely strong partnerships with UW-Madison as well as Madison College, so students can be duly enrolled, getting credits, so that when they go on to post-secondary education, they already have credits as they walk into the doors of either Madison College or UW-Madison. So we have some really exceptional, tremendous programs in this district that, as a board member, I want to talk more about. Yes, we have challenges, but sadly, I feel like those challenges sometimes overshadow the great things that we have in our community. We have tremendous diversity, and I just have to say, as an educator, we have amazing educators. Our staff is phenomenal.
Is there any difference between you and your opponent on charter schools?
The conversation has not come up, so I honestly don't know my opponent's positions on charter schools.
And you're opposed to expanding charter schools?
What?
You're opposed to expanding charter schools?
No. Mm-mm. No. Charter schools are...
I know it's a broad term. There's the whole issue of instrumentality.
Yeah. I support instrumentality charter schools, okay. Which would mean, and for folks, instrumentality means that the charter school would be accountable to the locally elected school board and our administration. I do not support non-instrumentality, so we're seeing two of those move through with Gary Bennett. So those schools will not be held accountable to the local school district. UW-Madison will be overseeing those. And I absolutely am opposed to voucher schools, which are private schools that get public money.
You know, I can think of only one vote you've taken that I don't watch all your votes on the school board, but there was only one that stuck out that I disagreed with, and that was school uniforms. I don't like the idea of the government dressing kids to look uniformly. It kind of goes against my grain. Mm-hmm. What's your thought on that?
You know, my thought, personally, I don't agree with school uniforms either. I don't really see them as being beneficial. I think the research that I've read shows that there is very little impact on student outcomes by wearing uniforms. I taught down in Texas where my kids wore uniforms, and as far as like making it less easy to differentiate between like kids who maybe were living in poverty versus their middle-class peers, you could still tell when kids were wearing uniforms. I mean, get that right. So all those things, I don't see them being as value. I think the reason I voted in favor is because the majority of the schools said they wanted to try it. And, you know, that was coming from the parents, the staff. And so if they want to try it, let them try it, I guess, and see if it makes a difference. Now, I was just in Wright Middle School, and that was the first question I asked. And I said, how is the uniforms going? What do you think about it? And, you know, basically what I thought would probably happen, some kids were using it, other kids weren't. It's not being enforced.
Oh, interesting.
And some kids don't like it, right? And but I guess my feeling was just, if they want to try it, let them try it. Let's see if we can learn something from it. And I'm not sure if they'll decide to continue to have school uniforms. We'll have to check back in.
All right. So in summation, you feel like your background as an educator is pretty important to have that voice on the school board, and your experience puts you at an advantage in this race.
I believe it is.
Yeah. All right. Election Day is April 3rd. Anna Moffitt, I'll be voting for you, and I appreciate you coming to SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.